Hello, everybody! Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 17 for March 30th. Chance Watson and Josh McDonald coming at you with the news. Josh, who is our sponsor today?
Allow me. Sorry, I've got a really bad eye twitch. I couldn't help but mention it. Chance told me not to. This episode is brought to you by Silver Corner Bar in Wallace. April's first Sunday digital wine tasting will be on Easter Sunday, April 4th, 2021 at 6 p.m. In honor of Easter brunch wines, we will be tasting sparkling wines from around the world, from champagne to cava and prosecco to domestic wines from America, and here's how to participate. Step one, pick your wine. If you're feeling trusting, jump in and order all four. You can participate with as many or as few of the wines as you would like. Like and follow Silver Corner Bar on Facebook and Instagram for the most up-to-date information. Step 2. RSVP to the tasting by texting Jocelyn at 206-909-7472 or send us an email at silvercornerbar@gmail.com with the following info, your name, phone number, and the wine or wines you want to try. Step 3. Pick up your wines. Wines can be picked up at the bar on Friday and Saturday from 5 p.m. until midnight. Step 4, watch. On Sunday, April 4th at 6 p.m., join our Facebook Live where we will taste our way through the wines together. We'll answer any questions you have and hopefully you'll be entertained along the way. Step 5, stock up. After the tasting, if you are fond of any of the wines, you can email us to order more. I do like Prosecco. I won't lie. It gives you a nasty hangover, though. It gives me a nasty hangover.
Doesn't old wine do that?
No, I don't. What?
Do you not like my French accent?
Ha-ha! Ha-ha! That's all I can do.
We should, Josh should probably add that into the ad.
Just at the tail end.
Ha-ha!
Ha-ha! Taste your wines at Silver Corner Bar.
Sorry, like France. It. My bad.
Yes.
You apologies. Are our allies until now.
That was the breaking point, huh?
We're launching a full-scale attack in the United States because of Josh McDonald and his horrific
butchered French accent.
Thanks for making fun of our accent.
Speaking of things getting butchered, I watched a very random movie yesterday. Gosh. It used to be an old hobby of mine. I used to watch random movies that I just like would see in the store or on Netflix or whatnot. I pulled up American Ultra last night, and star-studded cast, but they just couldn't seem to get it together.
Okay, Jesse Eisenberg, he cranked out a home run when he made The Social Network.
Yeah. I liked him in Zombieland.
And then Zombieland as his unassuming, rather aloof hero.
He always plays the same character, which I don't hate. Like, it's like Bruce Willis always plays the same character.
Yeah, but he plays the same character until suddenly he decided he wanted to be like Lex Luthor.
Yeah, that was bad.
It was jarring, to say the very least.
That was not good.
But I don't know. I don't not like him. I won't not watch something because he's in it, but I don't know. Something about him is off-putting. But that's not even really my real issue with this movie.
Mm.
My issue is with Kristen Stewart.
Mm.
She comes across to me as so ungodly dull. And
okay, to be fair, there can be a time and a place for this in the movie. So I'm probably one of the few in the camp that okay, let me back up on that. I'm definitely the majority of people who did not like the Twilight movies. That being said, I don't think they were bad because of the acting skill of her and Robert Pattinson.
Okay.
I don't think that those were bad. In fact, maybe just because we were spoiled by like The Matrix in 1999. Mm-hmm. But how did like what was the first movie in early 2000s?
The first Twilight movie?
Yeah, when was that?
That was probably late 2000s.
Okay. How was the special effects so terrible in that movie?
Well, the budget was only like $100,000.
Not after the first one. It still was bad.
You're right, yeah.
It was still better. Not good. And maybe it's just because like I've always been, you know, vampires. Like when I think when I say vampire movie, what do you think?
Either Underworld or Blade.
Okay. Yep. I was going to go with What's the 80s one with...
Oh, the Lost Boys.
Yeah, yeah. Lost Boys. Yeah. Lost Boys, and then Blade. Yeah, most likely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. So when you have that like...
Or even like Buffy.
Oh.
People...
Aren't they rebooting Buffy?
I think so. But here's the problem with Kristen Stewart. They cast her as these... In these strong female roles, and she just doesn't strike me in that role. Like when she played Snow White, she was not Snow White. She did not
too dull. Like it's. I'm not saying that she can't act. Like she has to be in a perfectly unique position for it. And maybe it was because you know the tragedy of it was Twilight gave her. But yeah. But you're right. Like because she has such a stern. Like look about her.
Yeah.
Maybe like the directors are like, let's put her in like a heroic role of some kind. Did you end up watching the, I don't think anybody saw it, but the reboot of the Charlie's Angels.
No.
Where she was in it, but not even the lead.
Yeah. It was like it's so horribly reviewed. I just did not waste.
No, my time. I didn't,
which is a shame because the ones that came out in the
2000s. I love Charlie's Angels, yeah.
The 2000s.
Yeah.
Like, and obviously, the people who enjoyed the show back in the 70s.
They didn't like it.
They were like, you know, they've not cared for any of the reboots.
Sure.
But, you know, for us who were like, oh my gosh, Lucy Liu, Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, we love this.
Oh, it was great.
We were looking.
I thought it was a great cast.
We were looking at this new reboot going, oh, there's so many great female actors. This is obviously going to be amazing. The lady who made it, Elizabeth Banks.
Yes.
Love her in everything that she does.
What has she done?
She's Miri in Zack and Miri.
Okay.
She plays the judgy acapella judge, the female acapella judge in the Pitch Perfect movies.
Yeah.
And is hilarious. And that movie, the Charlie's Angels movie was just bad.
Mm.
I did watch Underwater, which has Kristen Stewart in it, and it's like a mixture of like Alien,
okay,
with it's like Alien but underwater.
I could see her in some sci-fi roles. That'd be cool.
And she like had a shaved head and kind of looked like Eminem.
Interesting.
And it was kind of a boring movie. But that like she plays scared girl, like scared reactionary girl, like in this movie I think they wanted her to be kind of a badass, but
okay,
she didn't come across as that.
Okay.
She came across as like willing to do anything to save her own life.
Sure.
In this, because she was fighting for her life.
Sure.
She played that well. That was okay. But that being said, I mean, I'm looking at her filmography right now. She's supposed to play Diana, Princess of Wales here, like Princess Diana.
I could see her doing that.
I don't see it.
I could see her.
But I don't know.
I could see it. We'll see. It's not, yeah. So actually transitioning out of that kind of, what are your thoughts on Robert Pattinson being Batman?
I mean.
Do you think he's going to.
He's been dark and broody in like everything that he's ever done.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
He had that, I haven't seen it, but The Lighthouse.
That I've heard
is, with Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, I've heard.
I've heard good things about it.
I've heard good things, and I've heard from, we'll call them the pearl clutchers,
sure,
people who are going, "Oh, that's a terrible movie." But usually, when those people say a movie's terrible,
it's usually pretty good.
It usually means that I want to watch it,
yeah,
and it ends up being something I'm like, "Wow, they didn't like it because it was different."
Sure. So I could like that, and then I did end up seeing his bit part in that very dark Netflix movie with him and Tom Holland. I thought he did fine in that too.
Yeah. The Where Are They Now for the Twilight cast, Robert Pattinson has definitely had the best career out of.
Yeah, he's been doing well. Seems like anyway.
He made that Water for Elephants movie that everybody loved.
Yeah, it was good.
Taylor Lautner, on the other hand, he like
disappeared.
He made like a bunch of like direct to Redbox type movies.
Going right back to the very beginning, we were talking about American Ultra. What happened to Topher?
Topher Grace?
Yeah.
I mean,
he just can't get a role.
When you play a,
like, was it Venom? Did he poison his acting career when he played Venom in Spider-Man 3?
That My Boss's Daughter movie too. He also played, it was one of those things where like,
he's just always going to be Eric Forman.
Yes. He will never not be Eric Forman.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for him, Eric Foreman was such an apathetic character that, like, you can't escape that.
Yeah.
Like Ashton
Kutcher. Like, he did too good.
Ashton Kutcher's had no problem escaping.
Oh, yeah. I can think of many other things that Ashton Kutcher.
And
I
then, mean, you know, because he's so easily Kelso all the time, when he made The Ranch, he just, you know, him and Hyde got back together and made another TV show together.
Right.
You look at some of the other people, because what's her name? Donna hasn't done much other than Orange is the New Black, where she plays basically a very similar version to Donna.
Yeah.
Mila Kunis has been
a huge acting.
If you haven't seen the Bad Moms movies with Mila Kunis, those are hilarious.
Well, and Ted's fantastic.
Debatable, but
okay.
Yeah, I know a lot of people love that movie. I could not get past the bear. It was too cartoony for me.
Sure.
But I do love Mark Wahlberg.
Sure.
This has been a really nice trip down memory lane.
This is good. But yeah, to wrap it up, American Ultra. Don't
waste your time.
It's not bad. It's just not it's an hour 30-minute distraction from life, but it's that's not fair. It's not bad.
Isn't that what
it's
you
just
need?
Not like
we could once, all use a good hour 30-minute distraction.
Once again, we have Topher Grace as a whiny bad guy, eerily reminiscent of his role in
as Eddie Brock
or Venom.
Yeah.
So it's just not. I don't know why they keep casting him as a bad guy. Is it maybe it's his, like, he wants to be like, I want to be brooding.
Yeah.
I don't want to be Eric Foreman. You can't
shed that. And surprisingly enough, he did not make an appearance on The Ranch.
That was strange.
Which everyone else really,
was expecting.
The girls didn't, but he was the only member of the guys cast.
Yeah. Fez was on there too?
Yeah. Fez.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Fez is on there as well. He ends up working with Rooster or Hyde at the other ranch. That Rooster.
Yeah, it might be like the Friends effect, where you get like one member of the group that just is, you know.
And The Ranch, up until like the sixth season, was like probably in my top five favorite shows.
I'll have to watch it.
It's so good. Sam Elliott. Brooding.
Wow, who doesn't love Sam Elliott?
Brooding, cruel Sam Elliott.
Who doesn't love Sam Elliott?
All about it.
We'll leave on that. You can hit me. I won't fight back. I no longer like Ron. And there's your Parks and Rec reference for the day. I believe
all men's feet should remain uncaged, like all chickens.
I no longer like Ron. So good. Okay, let's jump into the Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines, starting with Saturday, March 27th. If you're looking for a refreshing, locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. The tap room is open 7 days a week, and you must try their new 10.5% Imperial Stout. Be sure to also check out their new lineup of hats and other merch available in the tap room. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole.
Boom!
Wow.
Fire. Parade. Fireworks return.
Yes. Like an Evel Knievel thing going on?
Do you want me to read this one?
No, I got it.
Okay. I just wanted to say boom.
Saturday, March 27th. Boom! Parade. Fireworks return. This is by Bill Bewley. Ladies and gentlemen, start your sparklers. I like that. 4th of July parade and firework display is planned in Coeur d'Alene this year. Daryl Hartwick, president and CEO of the Coeur d'Alene Regional Chamber of Commerce, said Friday that the chamber's board has decided to go ahead with the Independence Day celebration in the Lake City. Quote, "We'll be back to the traditional parade and fireworks," he said. It will also feature a family festival at City Park on Saturday, July 3rd, with food and entertainment as it spreads the fun over 2 days. Hartwick said that after having to cancel last year's July 4th parade and fireworks due to health concerns with the coronavirus, the chamber wanted to bring it back in 2021. He said it will boost the economy, raise morale, and unite the region. Businesses are looking forward to welcoming holiday guests in their shops. The parade will begin at its usual time of 11 a.m. with the fireworks over Lake Coeur d'Alene will begin after dusk. 4th of July parade applications are expected to be available soon on the chamber's website.
Hmm. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Good news. Yeah. It's
a big deal.
Yeah.
Also in that same Saturday edition, Riding Into the Sunset, this is by Devin Weeks. At 11 a.m. on Sunday, more than 100 motorcycle kickstands went up for two local gentlemen who have never met but are about to share a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Let me preface this real quick. This story came out on Saturday to pre-up the Sunday event, and I went through and I changed it a bit, so it's reading back now.
Copy.
Yeah.
One More Time Northwest's mission is to enrich the lives of adults with life-limiting issues or disease by helping them have experiences one more time. Through this nonprofit, Tiffany Walker, founder of the nonprofit One More Time Northwest, have been planning to grant the wish of hospice patient Frank Rode, 71 years old, a motorcycle guy who just wants to go on one more ride. He's unable to drive a motorcycle himself and will need support, so Walker sent out a social media request for a sidecar. She received plenty of interest as well as a call from members of Bikers Against Teen Addiction and Abuse, who offered assistance and found a sidecar to accommodate Frank. Synchronicity and serendipity also came into play. Walker said she received a message from a friend inquiring about a hospice patient in Rathdrum whose daughter put out a call to give her dad one last motorcycle ride. In disbelief, Walker realized this wasn't Rode, but another motorcycle guy, Mike Vig, age 58, who had the very same dream. Quote, "They've never met one another," Walker said. The daughter in Rathdrum didn't know we were doing it for the gentleman in Coeur d'Alene. What are the chances we were already working on Mike's last wish? The BATAA secretary, who goes by Snapper, and vice president, who goes by Unk, worked their biker magic and connected with clubs across the region to find another sidecar and make a magnificent event for Vig and Rode. Through social media and the biker community, at least four motorcycle clubs across the Inland Northwest were represented as they saluted Vig and Rode on the ride. Quote, "Not what we can do, but what we must," Snapper said. "Love, honor, respect. When we're doing these big rides, it's for two brothers in the last stages of their lives."
What a cool story.
Yeah.
What a cool thing.
Touching.
Gotta love those lighthearted stories from time to time.
Yeah.
All right. Jumping to the Sunday edition, March 28th. Candidates emerge for highway district races. This is by Craig Northrup. With election filings officially finalized, 11 candidates will compete for five highway sub-district seats up for grabs this May. The four highway districts, Worley, Post Falls, Lakes, and Eastside, are responsible for maintaining the local highway systems and county roads. Each maintains budgets ranging in the millions of dollars, with each acting as its own taxing district. The Eastside Highway District, for example, stretches along the north-south length of Lake Coeur d'Alene and extends east all the way to the Shoshone County border. It took in $6.2 million in revenue, a little less than half of which came from taxes. Lakes Highway District is running off a budget of just over $10 million this year, a $3 million drop from the year before. Tweet, who worked for the Highway District for 33 years and has served as commissioner for the past 17, said the job of maintaining county roads is neither easy nor cheap. Quote, "We do everything we can to make things happen with taxpayer money," he said. "When you look at everything the district crews do, they maintain all the county roads, do the chip sealing, the overlaying, they plow the snow, they really have a lot on their plate." Oversight of those budgets, district's directions, and the district policies come from three commissioners per district. Those sub-district commissioners are then given a modest salary for their time. Each district budget allows anywhere from $24,000 to $28,000 in total, which is then divided into their three commissioners' salaries for each year over the four-year rotating terms. Job usually comes with medical benefits as well. Tweet, a longtime Athol resident, is running unopposed as the incumbent for Lakes Highway Subdistrict Number 1, but he's far from the only candidate running for a highway commissioner's job this May. Post Falls Highway Subdistrict Number 1 race will come down to three candidates this spring. Kevin Hansen of Rathdrum, David Russell of Post Falls, will take on incumbent Terry Werner. Voters will have their choice in the Post Falls Subdistrict Number 2 race between Coeur d'Alene Jeff Tyler and incumbent Todd Tondi, also of Coeur d'Alene. Three candidates will vie for Eastside Highway Subdistrict Number 2 position. Incumbents and Cataldo resident John F. Austin has filed for re-election, going against fellow Cataldoan, I like that word, Tim Day and St. Mary's resident Angela Sieverding. Subdistrict Number 2 in the Worley Highway District race will come down to Worley resident Daniel Sneave and incumbent Connie Feely Johnson, who is running for her second term. Tweet said, anyone who assumes the role of commissioner, including the challengers looking to unseat the incumbents this year, should only run if they keep the best interests of drivers and taxpayers at heart. Quote, if you have something good to offer and you think you can actually help, you should run, he said. It's all about the people, and keep in mind, we're all about making the highway and roads better for everyone. Election day is May 18th.
This also coming from that same Sunday edition, Making Their Marks by Bill Bewley. The first day of the Idaho State women's bowling tournament at Sunset Bowling Center on Saturday was marked with mixed reactions. Grimaces for missed spares, sighs of relief over a lucky break, and shouts and high fives with strikes. It will continue for the next 3 weekends as about 400 bowlers from throughout the state compete for prize money and trophies in singles, doubles, and foursomes. It's the first time the championship has been held in North Idaho. The tournament, which has a full field, was open to anyone who wanted to register and features bowlers with a range of talents. Quote, people from Sunset Bowl are sure happy to have the state tournament up here, said Vern Ortel. He's the owner of Sunset. The opening ceremonies included speeches and a ribbon-cutting ceremony. Rathdrum Mayor Vic Holmes said, quote, it's exciting to see this big a group and not a mask in sight. I really appreciate that. Quote, we want to welcome you to our city and more importantly, spend a ridiculous amount of money, he added while laughing.
Good stuff. All right, jumping to Monday, March 29th, Coonie County GOP rallies against perceived threats. This is written by Bill Bewley. As Natalie Hughes began singing the national anthem at Saturday's Lincoln Day dinner, she sang alone. But before she finished the first verse, it seemed all 650 people in the ballroom of the Coeur d'Alene Resort had joined her. That showing of patriotism and love of country was on display at the annual event put on by the Kootenai County Republican Central Committee. Quote, tonight, we're here for our committee to bring common sense to government. I know it's hopeless, but I'll explain, said Brent Regan, Kootenai County Republican Central Committee chairman. He spoke of principles like honesty, integrity, reliability, compassion, faith, and grit. Quote, Republicans believe when those common sense principles are the basis for public policy, our society prospers, he said. Regan said those holding elected offices, quote, have the ability to change your life, including when it comes to property taxes. That's why the committee's mission to identify, recruit, train, promote, and help elect to public office, quote, citizens with common sense, citizens like you, end quote, he said to the crowd. There was extensive scrutiny for those three-hour security for those three-hour gathering that featured several speakers. Wall signs read Trump 2024, Trump Country, and Keep Idaho Red. There were plenty of light moments, too, with some jokes and laughs about counting ballots, but it was mostly a serious affair. It was filled with warnings about federal government overwatch, changing demographics, and influencing of the county's culture toward a liberal agenda. Tom Luna, chair of the Idaho Republican Party, said the Idaho Democratic Party has more money than the GOP, has more people on its payroll, and is opening offices in North Idaho and Eastern Idaho. Why, he asked, would they do this in a red state? Four reasons. He cited Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, and Nevada. Quote, it wasn't that many years ago they were solid red states, he said. Democrats, Luna said, changed that by focusing on new arrivals to the states. Quote, slowly but surely convincing them the Republican Party in that state was not in their best interests. Keynote speaker Michelle Malkin, a conservative blogger, author, and political commentator, gave a passionate, humorous, and even ominous 30-minute speech about threats to the Republican Party, the country, its culture, and what it would take to achieve victory. Quote, we have to have, yes, an attitude of gratitude, but an attitude of defiance, she said. Unchecked immigration will change demographics in the country, states, and neighborhoods. If it's not stopped, it's game over. Malkin, the daughter of Filipino immigrants, said she has been accused of, quote, acting white. Quote, if you're going to keep Idaho red and you're going to keep America red, it's up to you, she said. You don't need permission from no non-white people to speak up for you. Stop that. Quote, it's okay to be white, she said, to which someone in the crowd said, yes, it is. Her closing statement, which received a standing ovation, was, quote, one nation under God, no hyphen, no apology. And the only time that we should be on our knees is when we're praying to God. Otherwise, stand up, speak out, and defend our homeland. Oh, that was a big story. Okay. Jumping to Tuesday, March 30th.
Owl Cafe goes dark, property up for sale. This is by Craig Northrup. One of the landmark go-to restaurants in Hayden has shut its doors in hopes of selling. The Owl Cafe, a longtime fixture on Government Way, is quiet. The usually full parking lot that accompanies the bustling crowd inside the Breakfast Beacon is now empty. Ownership did not reply to requests for comment, and the phone number listed for the restaurant rings without answer. A sign by the parking lot entrance announces the property is for sale. Out front, a message from the window reads, closed, thank you for 26 years. Those 26 years represent the latest stretch from the current ownership. In actuality, the restaurant had been open for longer. J.T. Corcoran, the Coldwell Banker Schneidmiller Realty listing agent for the property, said the Owl Cafe dates back to 1940. Quote, it started out as a gas station, he said. They'd converted it into a restaurant in the 1950s. The owner added a small restaurant in the early 50s, and it became what it is today in the late 50s. The death of the Owl Cafe, meanwhile, might only be temporary. Corcoran said the property, listed at $650,000, has seen a number of interested parties, and the Owl's popularity might very well see new owners who want to continue the restaurant's success. Quote, I think you'd be shocked to see how many people in Hayden go there every day, he said. Mayor Steve Griffiths, who contends the Owl Cafe retired with the trophy of world's best biscuits and gravy, noted that the struggles restaurants like the Owl have faced since the onset of the pandemic, saying that he hoped it would return to form after the sale. Quote, the Owl Cafe has been a wonderful part of Hayden for many years, Griffiths said. These past months have been so difficult for many of our businesses. We wish the owners of the Owl Cafe the best.
Knowing the restaurant game right now, I'm sure it won't stay empty for quite long. All right, jumping down, windstorm blows over with little damage, Craig Northrup. The windstorm that sparked fears of a repeat of January's destruction blew through Kootenai County Sunday with far less damage. While wind gusts did exceed 50 miles per hour at times, according to the National Weather Service, far fewer trees fell on streets. A few large trees fell on and around Lakeside Avenue, and another tree had reportedly crossed Coeur d'Alene Avenue. A few property owners reported some damage to houses and outbuildings. Quote, in the wake of Sunday's windstorm, Avista crews are working to restore power as quickly and safely as possible, Avista Director of Operations David Howell said Monday morning. Strong winds combined with wet, saturated soil resulted in trees coming into contact with our power poles and lines. We prepare for events like this, but you never fully know what will happen until the winds subside and our crews assess the damage. But, by and large, the damage was minimal in comparison to that of the January 13th storm that killed a Post Falls man, cut power to more than 30,000 residents, and toppled hundreds of trees within the cities.
Yeah, that was a crazy one.
That was definitely a doozy.
What does that move us into? Shoshone News Press headlines?
Into the Shoshone News Press headlines.
Wonderful.
Yep.
What do you got?
So, headline for us, a story that I authored, actually. Here comes the A-Team.
Oh, yes.
Yes. In a giant black and red van. Just kidding. That's not different. Not talking about the actual A-Team. A new group currently being formed by the Silver Valley Economic Development Corporation is looking for members and wants you to join. No, you probably won't be rolling around in a tricked out van with Hannibal and the rest of the A-Team, but you will be helping the community solve a long-standing problem, a lack of broadband service in Shoshone County. Silver Valley Economic Development Corporation Executive Director Colleen Rawson recently announced the creation of the Shoshone County Broadband Action Team with the goal of advancing all things involving broadband. The idea of the team was first dreamed up by Rawson and Silver Valley resident Linda Yergler after participating in several North Idaho broadband workshops in October of 2020. Those workshops, held in collaboration with the Panhandle Area Council, Clearwater Economic Development Association, and Broadband USA, provide communities with expert technical assistance and access to them in the future. Borrowing from Sanders County, Washington, the idea of forming a local action team was born. The team, when it gains more members, will be tasked with answering some of the toughest broadband questions that the county faces, such as, how do we get connectivity out to the gulches? How do we make sure what's being installed is affordable? How do we work on devices and educate the community so they can understand what broadband means? And how do we enhance telecommuting and telemedicine, Rawson talked about. First big step for the team will be securing grant funding from the state of Idaho that would cover the cost of network planning. With a tailored plan, the community would have a, quote, well-developed, data-driven plan to move forward with much larger grants and opportunities that will provide access to our county along outside the I-90 corridor. For this plan to come together, Rawson asks only two favors of people in Shoshone County for now. This plan includes ask, join, or tell others in the community about the group, the action team rather, take a few minutes to run an internet connection speed test wherever you are. Speed tests are incredibly vital as it shows that the state's broadband office just how underserved Shoshone County truly is when it comes to broadband. Rawson explains that FCC broadband access mapping currently relies heavily on the larger internet providers to say where the service is provided, and she said that we all know that that's not very accurate. All the data collected through the test is anonymous and not public. The test only records the upload, download speeds, location of the test, and the network it runs through. Quote, this is where we definitely need everybody to participate, Rawson stressed. Please help us paint that picture of what connectivity actually looks like in our community.
Wonderful.
Do it from different devices at different times from different locations. Use your internet service, Wi-Fi, and cell carrier. So anywhere at all, run this connection test. And in the online version of the story, we do have the hyperlink attached.
Cool.
So all you got to do is click on it.
Cool. Also on the front page, Pinehurst Elementary students go full frontier for a day. I thought that was kind of a
fun. That was pretty good.
Yeah. This is a... we write this story pretty annually, actually. So I always love this story because it's always got something new and exciting, but it is one of the cooler events in our area. The annual Mountain Man Rendezvous at the Pinehurst Elementary School was last week as students got to participate in a full fun day prior to school letting out for spring break. The event is part of the school's fourth grade curriculum and involves a living history lesson, a skills fair of sorts, complete with foot races, tug of war, silent bartering, gambling, hatchet throwing with markers instead of hatchets, and quote unquote fur trading. Each student comes to the rendezvous with 10 furs, which are represented by tickets, which they could then use to enter contests, barter, and or gamble with. Following the skills fair, the students got to take an in-depth look at what life was like in the early 1800s as a local resident and what is he, air quality shed coordinator?
Mm-hmm.
What is this? He's not a supervisor anymore.
Yeah, he's...
Callback. Uh-huh. That's a good callback. As Dan Smith presented his living history presentation of John Collins. John Collins was an original member of the Corps of Discovery on the Lewis and Clark expedition, and one that Smith believes would have really fit the mold of the early Silver Valley settlers. Quote, why John Collins? Typecasting, Smith said with a laugh. Quote, Collins was the single most disciplined person in the permanent expedition. Collins received 150 lashes in two separate court-martials, and he got away with a bunch of other stuff. Even after all this, he was treated with some level of privilege by the captains. It also seems like John Collins would fit right into the Silver Valley. Through the telling of stories and answering questions, Smith performs what he calls living history. Quote, living history can really bring a story to life, Smith said. Quote, kids learn so many ways. Reading about the expedition is very different from listening to a skilled interpreter tell it in a totally different manner. The students and the staff all enjoyed Smith's presentation, which seems to be the highlight of the annual event. Quote, Dan's presentation kept the kids captivated and he answered many questions afterwards, both in character and as himself, Pinehurst Elementary School fourth grade teacher Eli Bogard said. This presentation corresponded to our Lewis and Clark unit, which is also in our Idaho history curriculum. We'd like to thank Dan for once again volunteering his time to help us learn more about this exciting time in our state's history.
Very cool story.
Yeah, Idaho history is a regular part of fourth grade curriculum here in Idaho. So all of our teachers try to do
that. Like, hasn't changed. That was the same when both of you
were. I feel like when I was in school, that was a fifth grade thing.
Oh, I did in fourth grade for sure.
They made you do this thing called the state notebook at the school that I went to, where you had to, it was like a year long project.
Kind of. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I remember doing something like that.
I think we're spoiled here in North Idaho because so much of Idaho's history is tied directly to where we are. Not to discredit those people down south. But, you know, had it not been for the mining rush that we had up here and all of the things that we have going up here as part of that Lewis and Clark expedition, like we really have a lot, like where the cradle of Idaho is right up in this area.
Yep.
Ugh.
Good?
Yeah.
All right. That moves us into what's happening.
What's happening? I love What's Happening. What's Happening is brought to you by Watts Appliance. Watts Appliance has been providing incomparable customer service to the Silver Valley for over 50 years. The family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding appliances and the brands that they sell. Whether you're in need of a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit them at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst.
Perfect.
All right. Jumping into What's Happening.
I'll do this first one.
All right.
I'll do this first one. This is coming from the Wallace Press Times, March 30th, 1918. Headline, says Idaho dry law ineffective. Is it? Says Idaho dry law ineffective. That's the headline. There's no, it's not cut
it's
off.
It's got to be prohibition related.
It must be. The entire session of the district court yesterday was consumed in choosing a jury and hearing the evidence of the two principal witnesses for the state in the case of James A. Williams, a cafe owner of Wallace, charged with selling intoxicating liquor. You hear this, Josh? Selling intoxicating liquor. Huh. What an infestation. interest hinged upon the question raised by attorney Isham North N. Smith of counsel for the defense of whether Idaho law provides a penalty for violations of the, quote, dry law. The contention was raised by the defense when prosecuting attorney H.J. Hull was making his opening speech to the jury, laying before it his procedure in hiring detectives and the subsequent alleged apprehension of Williams in selling liquor. Attorney Smith objected to the prosecuting attorney's plan of procedure, and recess was declared while the attorneys for the contending sides referred to the session laws of the state. The state produced its first witness, A. Dubacree? Yes. A. Dubacree, the detective who claims he bought a flask of whiskey from Williams.
Oh, dear.
Oh, what a monster. Attorney Smith objected as the at this point of introduction of testimony of any evidence that was the case on the ground that the 23rd Amendment of the Idaho Constitution, while it declares that it is unlawful to deal in any way with intoxicating liquor, does not prescribe a penalty for doing so, and by its wording virtually renders void all previously enacted statutes which do prescribe penalties for the sale of possession of intoxicating liquor. What an interesting case.
Yeah, prohibition is a wild time, and there are still places in Wallace that have connecting tunnels where, like, you could, oh, there's no liquor here, man. Uh-huh. That's next door. And, oh, there's no liquor here. That's next door. Like, it's funny how that stuff all works.
Good stuff.
Jumping ahead about, you know, in 50 years or so to the Kellogg Evening News, March 30th, 1981. Mobile home park plan near Montgomery Gulch. This is by Kathy Russell, a Kellogg Evening News staff writer. Excavation work has begun for a proposed 23-lot mobile home park to be located west of the mouth of Montgomery Gulch near the East Kellogg city limits. The three-acre site presently is zoned for general commercial use, but owners Mr. and Mrs. Thomas Gibbons have requested that the property be changed to a multifamily residential district to allow for a mobile park. The first mobile home may be available within 60 days following an April 8th Shoshone County Planning and Zoning Commission hearing on the zone change application. If Gibbons' zone change is approved, said Don K. Maddox, Marshall Realty Associate Broker and General Manager of Mobile Home Sales. Maddox says that he was contacted by Gibbons 5 or 6 months ago concerning the mobile home park project and also able to locate a house in the valley for Gibbons and his wife. The California couple may soon move to the area upon Mr. Gibbons' retirement from McDonnell Douglas Aircraft, Long Beach, California, he said. Tentative plans for development of the park include double-wide trailers with lease options to buy nestled in a aesthetically landscaped setting, according to Maddox. Sorry, reading off this picture, a little blurry here. That mobile home park still exists. It's really? The one right between, so right when you get past the mine tour, there on the old road, it's that mobile, that RV park, that mobile home RV park right there.
Exactly what you're talking about.
And then Montgomery Gulch is right there. Montgomery Gulch is kind of a hidden gem community. I think the residents would probably prefer I didn't say that, but right there, I mean, it is a cool little area. You come around the corner, there's the transfer station, but it really is kind of a sweet little area there.
Well, if you live in Montgomery Gulch or really anywhere in North Idaho, it's a great time to sell your house because inventory is low.
Yeah, it is.
Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty is a lifelong resident of North Idaho. She's a local realtor who is connected and knows every nook and cranny of our beautiful community. Contact Julie at 208-659-1764. She is your best friend in real estate.
Ooh, love Julie.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to take us into the Bonner County Daily Bee headlines, and we'll kick that off with Saturday, March 27th. Headline, some DUI arrests ruled unlawful. This is by Keith Kinnaird, the news editor at the Daily Bee. A state law which enables Idaho officers to make warrantless arrests for motorists for driving under the influence when the offense occurred outside of their presence has been ruled unconstitutional by the Idaho Supreme Court. The March 23rd ruling from the state's top bench conforms with a 2019 ruling in a misdemeanor battery case out of Kootenai County, which held the Idaho Constitution prohibits a warrantless arrest for a misdemeanor offense that occurred outside the presence of an arresting officer. The latest ruling was issued in the case of a Bonner County woman who successfully contested the suspension of her driver's license by the Idaho Transportation Department following her arrest for driving under the influence by Ponderay Police in 2019, according to court documents. Jasmine Crystal Reagan was arrested by Corporal Jeremy Diehl, who was acting on a citizen's report that Reagan was driving erratically and appeared to be intoxicated, court records indicate. Although Diehl did not witness the erratic driving, Reagan was arrested at her home after she failed field sobriety tests. Reagan's counsel, Sandpoint attorney Fred Palmer, appealed his client's license suspension in the First District Court. Judge Barbara Buchanan reversed the suspension, holding that Reagan's arrest was illegal because the officer did not personally witness the alleged misconduct and therefore needed a warrant to put her into handcuffs. Buchanan's ruling also nullified the evidence that the Transportation Department relied upon to support the license suspension. The state appealed Buchanan's reversal of the license suspension, and the High Court addressed whether the court's ruling in the Kootenai County battery case also applied to the Bonner County DUI case. Supreme Court Justice Gregory Moeller concluded that it did, according to a 15-page opinion. Moeller ruled that the framers of the Idaho Constitution did not intend to allow warrantless arrests for certain misdemeanors committed outside their presence. Quote, in short, because there was no exception at the time of Idaho's statehood to warrant requirement for misdemeanors committed outside of an officer's presence, public policy must yield to constitutional considerations, Moeller wrote. However, Moeller further held that Reagan's detention during the DUI investigation was valid and a breath test would have been permissible prior to her arrest. Quote, here, however, the officer did not just detain Reagan prior to the breathalyzer test, but he unlawfully arrested Reagan before administering the test. Chief Justice Richard Bevin concurred, as did Justices Roger Burdick, Robin Brody, and John Stegner.
Kind of love the legal stuff on all that.
You know, I remember when the misdemeanor battery, situation came out, and there was a lot of contention from everyone. I think we wrote about a few situations where these misdemeanor battery situations can be quite contentious for both police officers and for those people trying to prosecute in those situations.
Yep, absolutely.
What do you got?
Moving to Sunday, March 28th, Pope, brother plead not guilty. It's by Keith Kinnaird as well. Sandpoint man and his brother are pleading not guilty to more than a half a dozen criminal charges related to the insurrectionist violence in the nation's capital on January 6th. Michael Anthony Pope and his brother William entered the pleas earlier this month in U.S. District Court in Washington, D.C., federal court records show. Michael Pope is required to notify federal courts if he travels outside of a 100-mile radius of the state of Idaho. He is ordered to stay away from the Capitol unless he is attending court hearings or meetings with his attorney and pretrial release officials, according to the court documents. William Pope is required to notify pretrial service officials if he travels outside of his home state of Kansas and is also barred from being in Washington, D.C. unless attending court hearings or meeting with his counsel. Both brothers are prohibited from possessing illegal firearms while their case is pending in federal court. Status conference in the brothers' case is set for May 5th in Washington, D.C. Both defendants are free at no-cost personal reconnaissance bail while the case is pending, according to federal court records. Both brothers are charged with felony counts of obstructing or impeding an official proceeding and in civil disorder, which are punishable by up to 20 years and 5 years in prison, respectively, upon conviction. They also face misdemeanor charges of entering a restricted building, disorderly conduct in a restricted building, impending ingress of a restricted building, disorderly conduct in a Capitol building, impeding passage through a Capitol building, and parading in Capitol building, according to unsealed indictment in the release. Boy, that's a lot of charges. The popes were indicted by a grand jury 2 days ago after the Capitol riot and arrested in February. William Pope reported his involvement in the storming of the Capitol to the FBI and told investigators he was there to exercise his right to free speech. He denied engaging in any vandalism or violence. William Pope said he and his brother did not participate in any violence or vandalism during the episode.
Interesting.
Yes, very much so.
Also in that Sunday paper, opposition to mass at library endures. This, shockingly, by Keith Kinnaird. Mm-hmm. a group of nearly 30 people gathered at the East Bonner County Library on Saturday to peacefully protest the facility's mask requirement. Opponents of the library district's mask requirement, however, were not allowed to enter the building unless they donned face coverings. Several Sandpoint police officers were on hand and warned protesters that they could be subject to arrest for trespassing if they attempted to enter the building without a mask. Protesters opted not to take their chances and attempted to debate officers over the mask requirement environment. In addition to the legitimacy of President Joe Biden's defeat of Donald Trump at the polls last November, protesters tried to make their case without masks, social distancing, or raised voices, but officers politely affirmed the library district's position on the mask requirement. A few mask-wearing library patrons, meanwhile, quietly grumbled over the spectacle at the library's entrance as they came and went. Some mask opponents argued they should call on county commissioners to withhold funding to the library district. However, the district is an autonomous political subdivision, although the county does collect its taxes on the library district's behalf, which likely sustains the misconception that the county has authority over the district. Jalen Peters has no misconceptions about whose hands are at the levers of power in the library and is running for a position as a trustee on the district's board. Peters contends that there is ample evidence which demonstrates masks are ineffective in bridling the novel coronavirus, a position which runs contrary to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention position on the matter. Quote, "I'm not a yes man. I've lost jobs because of my convictions," says Peters, and I'm okay with that. So, interesting happenings at the East Bonner County Library.
Seems like it, yeah. Finally, last story here today. Tuesday on the March 30th, storm blows through with little damage by Rachel Sun. A windstorm Sunday evening affected roughly 4,000 Northern Lights Power customers in Bonner County, including residents in the Naples, Samuels, Sagal, Cocalala, and Priest Lake areas. A representative for Avista Utilities could not be reached before the print deadline, however. However, a press release stated that the company had roughly 18,600 customers total affected and 120 incidents reported. The areas hit hardest, according to the release, were Coeur d'Alene, St. Mary's, and Grangeville. Problems started around 4:30 p.m. when winds reached their peaks, said Kristen Metic, engineering and operations manager at Northern Lights. All power from the company's customers was restored by roughly 2 p.m. Monday. Kristen Rieger, an employer at Domino's, said she narrowly missed a falling tree during a pizza delivery in Dover. Quote, "We see the worst of the worst," she said. On the Sandpoint local forum on Facebook, some residents reported power outages, trees falling, and road blockages in the Sealy Valley, Dover, Gold Creek Road, in Sandpoint. Quote, "This wasn't as bad for us as the windstorm January 13th, she said. "That was bad enough. We had to do a FEMA paperwork. Had to do FEMA paperwork, right?"
Oh, yeah.
And everybody loves dealing with the federal government because it's just so, so convenient.
You know, I think FEMA's been everyone's, like, most popular whipping boy since Hurricane Katrina.
I thought you were going to go facetious on that. I thought you were going to be like, they're the most popular federal agency.
No, no, they've been.
Say probably right up there with the EPA and the IRS. Yeah.
The EPA here locally, I think we hear a lot about that, and that's like in a echo chamber.
Fair enough.
IRS, you know, IRS.
People, universally.
People don't like anyone that they have to give their money to.
Yeah.
But FEMA is that group that everyone's like, oh, FEMA's coming.
Mm-hmm.
That means something bad happened, and now you have no choice but to rely on the help of someone
FEMA never shows up and is just like, hey, how you guys doing? FEMA's everything good?
Never there for a good reason. Nothing good has ever resulted in FEMA's.
They just show up. You guys are doing great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Like, keep it up.
Like, FEMA hasn't ever hosted like a summer barbecue.
Yeah.
Like, the FEMA Summer Slam Jam festival will never happen.
We probably have FEMA employees on here. They're like, hey, we had a great barbecue.
We had a great barbecue. What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Either that or we're about to get emails to a FEMA barbecue.
The FEMA, yes. Like, invite us to make show this, that hey, it's fun.
These news press guys really need to know just how much fun FEMA can really be.
We will write a story on it. I will eat my words. We will come on this podcast and be like, you know what? We went to the FEMA barbecue. the FEMA spring fling.
And it was awesome.
And it was awesome.
It was great.
It was great.
Oh, man. Well, that's going to do it today. Big shout out thanks to Silver Corner Bar for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget that April's first digital wine tasting will be on Easter Sunday at 6 p.m. In honor of Easter brunch wines, we'll be tasting sparkling wines from around the world, from champagne to Cava and Prosecco to domestic wines from America.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in any of the stories we talked about or the ones we didn't talk about, on any, you can check them out on our websites at www.coeurdalenepress.com, ShoshoneNewsPress.com, BonnerCountyDailyBee.com, and those Friday episodes, the BonnersFerryHerald.com. Please subscribe to us on whatever podcatcher you use, whether it be Pandora, Spotify, Player FM, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. We're on pretty much every single one of them, so there's no wrong answer on that. Just hit that subscribe or follow button and leave a nice review if you have nice things to say about us. That's it always helps us out a little bit.
It's true.
It strokes our ego a bit.
We don't care about the bad reviews.
No, we ignore those. Just kidding. Delete them real quick. Always appreciate criticism. Always. Yeah, Josh.
Right.
All right, that's going to be it for us. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and we'll see you on Friday. Hope you guys are enjoying those Gonzaga episodes that we're dropping. We're going to continue those throughout the NCAA tournament. So keep an eye out for one of those when that drops later this week. Most likely, I would say, when's Gonzaga play? Gonzaga plays today as we record this.
Right.
And then when are they playing?
Let's see if they make it out of
today. If they win... Probably no. There's going to be at least a recap episode, so probably
it'd be next weekend.
Yeah, probably look for probably something on Wednesday or Thursday, perhaps. So
yep.
We'll see. We'll let you know. All thanks, right. Everybody.
Bye bye.